Hello and welcome to today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. It's the future, past or present day, and the X-Men are struggling with their powers, physical features, social status, and or skin colour. Meanwhile, Magneto is set on trying to kill everyone, kill mutants, kill humans, kill himself, or kill the president. The mutants are under threat from Stryker or the government, humans, disease, future, who want to either kill them, change them, neutralise them, experiment on them, or lock them up. And while they've been distracted, a mythical force, ancient alien, evil mutant, or even one of their own, threatens to ruin pretty much everyone's day. Throughout all of this, Professor Charles Xavier either has hair or doesn't have hair, and is either in Cerebro, dead, or a sex pest.
What?
All of this, and possibly quite a bit more, on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break.
Oh my God.
Right. First up, joining me, as always, is Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison. Anna, what did you think of the new or returning mutant who did or didn't die by the end of this movie?
Well, I think I know how you felt about it, Dan. My reaction, to say the very least, was mixed. Let's go with mixed. We'll unpack that through the course of the episode.
And what's leathery purple and hasn't seen daylight in a few thousand years?
Oh my god.
It's Agent Martin Carter. How are you?
I was fine. But just to be extra difficult because of that horrendous intro, I love this film.
What?
This is one of the best films in the MCU. God.
I'm so excited that Martin likes this film. I really wish I'd been recording his reaction to your intro.
Okay, so if you haven't clocked on yet, we have been watching 2016's X-Men Apocalypse. So before we get into it, hello to all our new listeners this week from around the world. And if this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more, there are spoilers in this podcast for films that have previously happened. But we are at the end of the trail now for the MCU. We don't know what's after this, so I don't think there'll be any spoilers yet for future movies. But if you're enjoying it, please remember to review it, subscribe it if you like what you hear. Also, follow us on our Instagram. Anna, what's the details?
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
Okay. Straight on with the show.
Yeah.
Feels like a very quick sort of way into it after the past few weeks. We're going to get straight on. Anna, you're going to wrap up this movie in 1 minute. It shouldn't be difficult. Oof. Nothing happened.
Oh, my God.
Dan, you need to calm.
All right, I've got to admit, I'm not feeling... You know what? I'm not jinxing myself. Let's do it.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
BCE flashback. Weird pyramid heist introduces our raisin-faced villain, but no time for proper introductions. Flash forward. As Scott Summers blast bullies, Mystique is rescuing mutants from cage fighting, and Eric is living sweet family life that can only end in horrible death. Now worst ever CIA agent, Moira McTaggart kickstarts Blue Meanie's release as Jean dreams of the end of the world. Apocalypse goes on a hiring spree, recruits Storm, Psylocke, Widowed Magneto, and Angel to his entourage. Meanwhile, Raven is back at the X-Mansion to have another mutant rights conversation with Charles. But catch-ups are on hold as Apocalypse pops into the mansion to snatch Professor X, and Havoc blows up the school. Luckily, Quicksilver is nearby on a daddy quest and saves every damn kid, Bulldog, Goldfish, except for Havoc. And oh yay, Stryker's back on the scene. He scoops up our heroes while Apocalypse uses Charles to broadcast a message of impending doom. After Bizarro cameo from Crazy Wolverine, the ex-kids successfully rescue the ex-adults. Apocalypse builds a massive pyramid, and Eric, crap, is wiping out the world with magnetic dust or something. Mutant on mutant showdown. Lightning blast, throwing cars, daddy issue, saving Charles from golden goo. It's final boss battle time. Bald Charles takes on Blue Meanie, but everyone is totally effed until Magneto, surprise, swaps sides, and Jean unleashes her Phoenix power, toasting Apocalypse to dust. The mansion and Moira's memories are speedily rebuilt, and the new X team is a go.
Stop.
Oh,
man. You are that so lucky there. 1 minute, 1.003. Oh. So I think we can give you that one.
Thank you.
If you hadn't done a little stumble, you'd have been comfortable.
Yeah.
You'd have been in the low 30s. Great. So,
I heard a third of that.
Yeah, fair enough. I will post this. Oh, man. I realize I am so behind on posting the scripts to the Challenge Annika. So, and I've got them all. So I will just post all of them in quick succession.
We'll do a highlight.
Yeah. I'll stick them all in the highlights.
So before we crack on, let's have a look at today's snack. Anna, what have you brought for us?
So what I have brought, because...
Haven't we had these before?
We have not.
Oh. We had some sort of thin Oreo.
Yeah, so I didn't bet we're becoming inadvertent adverts for Oreos, but I have brought us these new Oreo Joy Fills, because I'm going to tell you right now, this movie did not fill me with a lot of joy.
Ba, ba, ba,
so here we go. They're like these little... Ooh, They're weird. Yeah. These little
they don't look massively
appealing. These look like those cereals. What are they called?
Oh, Crave
or something?
They do look like Crave.
They look like Crave. Maybe I should have them with milk.
They taste like Crave.
They do. Maybe they're meant to... Are they meant to be cereal? Have I brought a cereal?
This was just like leftover cereal bits, wasn't it?
Maybe. Oh, they're not bad.
These are too small. Like, compared to the picture on the packet,
they look...
I was expecting them to be chunkier.
Crispy and creamy.
You know what? I actually like... Because they're not, like... They're not crazy, crazy sweet.
Like, it's like eating dry cereal, but you don't feel bad about it.
Yeah.
You eat like eating dry cereal.
Like, yeah. I can binge on these like I binge on Cheerios.
Yeah. Okay, this might not be my best snack offering.
I thought you were going to bring something 80s.
I thought about it. What would I... What 80s snack would you have brought?
After eights? Never mind me the 80s.
Yeah. All right.
Great.
Great. Yeah. Unlike this movie. Okay, let's... I'll stop ripping on it, okay? I'll change my tune. We'll have a constructive conversation about how bad this movie is. Let's go through the cast for what it's worth.
All right.
Cheers and boos, please. For James McAvoy as Professor Charles Xavier. Boo!
Yeah, I'm going to give him a...
He was the least awful in this film.
Yes, agreed.
Out of all the versions
previous
we've seen of him.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender as Magneto.
Yay!
These films, I'm telling you, this is the Magneto origin story that we never got.
Yeah.
He is the best bits of this film are him.
Totally. He does like stillness so well. Mm. Like, you know, considering that you're playing this pretty much all-powerful mutant guy, and, you know, you're very good-looking and very strapping, like, he definitely takes his time with those kind of quieter beats, which I think just... Oh, man, just elevates his character so much.
Yeah, I think he benefits very well from having less lines in this movie because everyone else's lines are terrible.
Oh, God.
We'll get onto the script.
Nicholas Holt as Hank McCoy.
I really like Nicholas Holt as Hank. It was a shame that he wasn't blue.
Yeah.
Like, permanently.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. But I guess you've got to get that FaceTime, don't you?
It's
Hollywood.
Yeah.
You can't get Scott Summers.
I also think, like, I imagine that Jennifer Lawrence was like, I'll do it again, but I don't want to be as blue as in previous movies.
Mm.
She was definitely wasn't having any time in that.
Like, I get that the point of my character is that I shouldn't be ashamed to be blue, but I personally don't want to be blue.
Yeah. She did want to be getting up at 5 a.m. to get in that trailer all blued up.
They really have dialed back her... like prosthetics massively. Like, she seems to have a bunch of like stickers on her forehead that's like circles and squares.
And like the red wig is like getting like rattier every time we see
it. It's like, really don't worry, creepy. Jennifer, just don't exfoliate for a week.
Yeah.
We'll cover you in some blue goo, you'll be fine. So speaking of which, Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique.
I still really like
her. Yeah. I do too, considering that I do remember some hearing a bit around this movie that Jennifer Lawrence was kind of, for lack of a better term, like kind of forced on Bryan Singer for this film because of her star power, that she was kind of given a bigger treatment. But I don't really think the movie suffered for that. I think she definitely anchors it really well.
Mm.
So I recorded this off of the television a few weeks ago, and I pressed the information button just to check the year. And I noticed that it said, you know, Oscars. I was like, what has this been nominated for? Did it win? Is it actually a lot better than I remember? Actually, it just said Oscar Isaac.
Oh.
who played Apocalypse.
What else has he been in?
Poe Dameron, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Is that him?
Yeah. Poe Dameron.
Inside Llewellyn Davies.
Some other stuff.
Oh, I thought he was, like, old. I thought, like, the actor playing him was old.
He's quite a young, very good-looking man.
And he's turned up as some sort of, goth at a convention. He was definitely wearing New Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like absolutely. Old man, blue man group. Like, it was...
But in a metal snood.
Yeah, in a proper... Oh, I can't applaud. I really
Egyptian times, not the height of fashion.
I really like that actor. I was really surprised that it was him.
Rose Byrne as Moira MacTaggert.
She was there.
Evan Peters as Quicksilver.
Yeah.
He provides some good.
I'm glad that his bits were over quickly.
Oh. I love that he's in the holding cell. We don't know, bro. That was so funny.
Josh Hellman as Stryker. We've seen him a few times as Stryker now.
Fine.
He is what
he is. I am an angry man in camouflage.
That whole bit made no sense.
Sophie Turner as Jean Grey.
Yeah, I mean, I like her in this. I think it's really weird having.
Come on.
Let's not talk about Game of Thrones, shall we? However, I think even though this was just 2016, I think her acting has come on leaps and bounds since this film.
I did not think she was good in this film. I was like, what accent are you trying to do? It really flitted between posh British and American. She didn't particularly have a huge amount of... I think a lot of it was down to the script. I think the script in this was generally terrible.
Yeah.
But like the first time you see her, she like knocks into Scott Summers and her dialogue there is really horrible. It's
very
like,
stilted.
Why don't you keep where you're going, boo? But... And I just didn't think she was very good at acting in this, and which worries me about how much weight she has to carry in Dark Phoenix, that she's just not very good in this film.
I don't think she was given the right things to do in this film to build her character. And I think her like role was quite confused. Like, oh, was she outcast, but oh, she had this group of friends that seemed to really like her, or she was powerful, but she didn't really get to...
And she was also kind of meant to be young, but also still playing really old.
I
didn't get where she was meant to fit.
I would say I wouldn't necessarily put the blame of this character on her shoulders, really.
No,
but she was still terrible. Ty Sheridan as Scott Summers.
Fine.
Another perfectly fine side consideration.
Lucas Till as Alex Summers.
I quite liked him.
Really?
Yeah, he was fun.
Yeah, I like Havoc.
Wreak Havoc.
He was quite... Oh, that was awful. Oh, I talk about the most shoehorned in way of saying an X-Men superhero name. Like no one ever says that in real life.
It's like when you're on... Especially when you're on the floor, like, bleeding from the mouth.
Yeah, but come on, if you... Like, it is a cool line to say. Like, wreak havoc, and it's his name. I mean, you know.
So for people who may not have seen the film recently, this is a bit where... Charles Xavier has been taken over in the mind by Apocalypse, and Havoc, or Alex Summers, has been told to destroy Cerebro to help get him out of the circumstance. So all these terrible things are happening. Now that's not the time to like lay down some cool script.
Wreak Havoc, bro.
You just need to say like destroy Cerebro. Yeah. You don't need to say
it.
You don't need to
break
say
it.
Become the superhero that you are. Wreak havoc. Oh, it was so cheesy. And it's done. Yeah. And especially said by Charles Xavier, played by James McAvoy.
That was a bit weird.
Was just proper cringe.
There was
a lot of cringe.
There's a lot of cringe.
You've got a warplane. Now go to war.
Oh, that was so bad.
But like, there was one bit where Jennifer Lawrence, and it was just, it's so obvious acting, where like they happened upon an aeroplane, and Jennifer Lawrence is like, trust you know how to fly this thing. I'm like, every single movie where you find a plane, there is a line which says, can you fly this thing? And they always say this thing as well. It's like, it's a fucking plane. Call
you
it a plane.
You know what it is. You've seen a plane before.
It's like, oh, can you fly this version of this plane? You know, it's just like, speak like normal people. Yeah. I know it's a superhero film, but like, you don't have to speak in these like overdone phrases at all times. Recover. No. No one says that.
Yeah. I think also the fact that Havoc was the only person that died out of that explosion as well, considering that Quicksilver took the time to save the goldfish.
Wreak havoc, bro.
No.
But I felt like this happens so often in films where they kill a character and that's supposed to like provide some kind of emotional resonance. We'd barely gotten to know him, like, in any of the previous
films.
And
no one else cares about him.
And no one cares. He doesn't even get, like, a little tombstone ending, like we have seen in previous
Xavier's
films.
Xavier's not bothered.
No one's bothered. Even his brother gets over it right quick.
That school would go down in the Ofsted rankings very quickly.
These joy fills leave a lot of finger dust.
They are.
They're very finger dusty. They're like Cheetos.
They're like Cheetos.
Should we carry on with the cast?
Cody Smith-McPhee as Nightcrawler.
I liked him. I thought he was cute. He provided a couple comedic beats here and there. Although, like, am I supposed to sort of assume that, like, Mystique and, like, Azel kind of got together and equals Kurt?
Are we?
I don't know. Are we?
Are we?
No.
What?
Okay. Because he is, like, the complete amalgamation of their...
Is he?
He's too old.
Yeah, he is too old, isn't he?
Weird.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure in canon, Nightcrawler is Mystique's son.
Whoa.
So, anyway. Ugh.
I mean, that sort of subtext would have been interesting, but, you know, this movie was absolutely lacking in depth. So, Ben Hardy as Angel.
No, I mean, he was fine, but he was just like a nameless henchman, isn't he? He's pointless. He's absolutely pointless.
Alexandra Shipp as Storm.
yes, I mean, I liked her as Storm. I thought that really worked, the kind of presentation of it, the young scrappy Storm. I thought she was great. I really liked her.
And also the only character that we've had so far to speak in a non-traditional accent as well.
What Halle Berry did.
Ooh.
What?
Let's move on.
Lana Condor as Jubilee.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I was like, use your fucking powers. Yeah, come on.
I love that character. She's criminally underused. They had to know like what a popular character she was. Yeah. So just to like flash her up and then like never use her again was quite a shame.
And Olivia Munn as Psylocke.
Now, this drives me crazy. Like, that is such a good casting. Like, that is such a good casting for Psylocke. Like she totally embodies it. I mean, the outfit is problematic.
I need to talk about the outfit.
I mean, that is her traditional comic canon. Anyway. But then just not really given anything to do. Like...
I think she did have quite a lot to do.
She waved a pink sword.
I think she was the most antagonistic of the four horsemen.
But why? Like, I don't understand why any of them agree to be on Apocalypse's squad. Is that his name? Is that actually his name?
Oh, something.
Sabal Hanor or something.
I've always
Ensabano.
I always thought he was.
Which is not said in the movie, so you're not. Yeah. You can't be mistaken for getting a character's name wrong when it's barely said. Mm.
But I don't know. I think if you look at the Children of Thanos, we're not interested in knowing their emotional depth, their backstory, why they chose to follow Thanos.
No,
really.
But we don't see them join his cause. Whereas this, like a big, like, fine. If that's the case, where we're not going to give much like insider depth into why people are joining, then there needs to be something else, like whether it's like mind control or just a line that explains. Because Storm.
These people were against him when he turns up and they go, oh yeah, okay.
I think the thing that confuses it for her in particular is that she converts to his side really quickly from Caliban, you know, the kind of business admin-y guy who does passports. Like, I didn't feel like what Apocalypse said was enough to win her over.
Yeah.
But I think with Angel and with Storm.
Sure.
And with Magneto, I think you kind of got that they were inclined to be on that kind of
burn the world down type thing. Anyway. Yeah, and I mean, I could see Storm in particular being a bit manipulated in that she's younger. She kind of wants to break free. But yeah, I didn't understand why Psylocke joined him at all.
And I really like the kind of Aladdin vibes that Storm was bringing.
Yeah.
Like going around the market, stealing.
Street rat,
stealing things, looking after all the kids. Yeah. That was nice. I liked that.
Cool. Well, that is the whole of the cast that was listed. Have I missed anyone?
Well, just to touch on Psylocke's outfit, as we're I don't really enjoy it, that's weird. But like, everyone else's outfits was like adding power to them.
Mm.
So like turning Angel's wings into like iron metal, which like could kill people.
Yeah.
But hers was like suspenders and hair dye. And I just really liked how like completely completely ludicrous and like none of this is adding to your ability. Like, it's not making you more aerodynamic.
Yeah,
it's not giving you a little sword thing easier access to become a sword. It was just like completely ludicrous. And I feel like if I was turning into a superhero, that is the sort of thing I would do as well. It'd be like, none of this is helping my powers,
right?
But I fucking look like a superhero.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sat here saying that we should just shove all female superheroes into tight clothes that show off the legs.
Yeah, high thigh cut.
But I think that the X-Men... I think that the X-Men universe does a really bad job of making superheroes look unique in the way that they dress.
Yeah, like the whole idea of like, oh, now we need to put on these flight suits that we've just found. I'm like, when have anyone been on a plane and needed to put on a specific boiler jumpsuit? Like, I've never done that when I've been to Gran Canaria and I've had to suit up.
What airlines are you flying with? Ugh.
But then second, I think, you know, in the MCU, everyone's kind of hero garb is kind of rooted in something. So, like, Captain America's is rooted in... and Thor's is because that's the royal garb. Yeah. I quite liked in this film, they kind of tore up that rule book and were just like, do you know what? Just have superheroes in superhero wear. I quite liked that. Like, Magneto didn't need to put on a cape at all. But he had a cape, and I thought that was quite cool.
I still think they didn't do enough.
But I think, I don't know, like, the whole kind of, like, flight suit thing. I mean, there is something to be said that I think for like these young people that you're bringing into battle, you kind of want to give them the impression that they're a part of a team, and a uniform is the easiest way to do that. And I think like there are definitely a few beats where I think the homage to previous like iconic outfits. So at the very end, when Mystique is giving her like rally the troops, like, you know, the new X Force, whatever they are, she's wearing this kind of like white outfit, and it is completely reminiscent of one of her most well-known mm-hmm. outfits, without it being that weird tunic dress that she wears in the comics. And I thought that was done really well, and that's why the Psylocke thing kind of like rattled me a little bit. Like, it's like, I don't understand why you didn't take her iconic outfit, which is so overtly sexual, and sort of upgrade it in a way so it was like an homage, but also not bringing the questions of like, why do we have to dress female superheroes like this? Although I love Storm's outfit. I thought that one was great.
Yeah, she was cool. But again, nowhere near what she wears in anything else. No. Really.
So while we're on the subject of female superheroes, let's mm-hmm. go into the one who will be undoubtedly the main focus of the next movie, and the thing that we're building all towards is Jean Grey.
Yeah.
So we see in this movie, Jean Grey played for the first time by... Is it the first time? She wasn't a cameo or anything in previous...
No. It's the first time.
Which is really interesting, because, Dan, this is the first time you've seen this film, which I think we need to get into.
And last.
But when I mentioned it to you in passing that she was in this film, that
Sophie Turner
and the character was in this film, you were surprised? You thought that Dark Phoenix was...
The introduction.
So what did you think about, like, because I rewatching this, I was surprised that you just kind of stumble into her character, mm-hmm. like, quite literally, and she's just a school girl with 80s hair and a blazer.
Sits like, underneath a tree, does her homework.
What did you think, A, about the introduction of Phoenix and the character, but also having watched this for the first time? Because with the MCU and with season one, there was loads of films that I'd never seen. But you've seen every single one of them apart from this one, and we're like 25 films deep.
Aside from the ones where it was the first time we all saw it, but I guess that's a bit different. I don't know, you know, I thought that... I was surprised when you said that she was in it. I couldn't really remember the trailers, because after we saw the look of the villain in 2016, I was kind of turned off. You know, my critical view of a movie was not as deep as it is now. Then I was a trailers guy. Now I don't watch trailers, really. Mm. But after seeing the trailers, I had no appetite to go see this movie.
He looked like Ooze from the Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first
thing
everyone
was saying. Which was like the stereotypical thing everyone was saying online as well. But that's because it's fucking true.
Yeah.
Like, I remember people trying to explain it away and go, oh, well, you know, the lad does CGI, it's just practical effects. The lad it on late. No, he looks like that. I didn't really feel like there was anything that alludes to this being the same character as the Jean Grey that we saw in the first X-Men movies. Mm-hmm. And didn't really seem to... I know we... So one thing that we've said a lot about this is that a lot of these are origin stories to kind of those characters that we've seen, and we've referenced a lot that it is kind of the big Magneto origin story. But I think with the other characters as well, especially maybe Mystique, we've seen the troubles that they have later in their lives sort of reflected in their younger selves mm-hmm. and how they figure that all out. But actually, with Jean Grey's character, I didn't feel like any of the sort of difficulties and troubles that she has in her later character development are at all referenced at this mm-hmm. stage. And I don't really see any of the seeds being laid for that until she rolls her eyes back and goes
into flames. I really disagree, because I think in the bit where Charles Xavier goes, "Release your power!" I think that's really... You know, we've talked a lot about kind of him controlling her, and I really think that throughout this film, until that very moment, he's always been kind of keeping a lid on her. So, like, he goes to her room when... she's having that kind of nightmare vision thing to kind of compress her again. I think the reason why we don't see a lot of future Jean in this is because he's got such a tight control over her. But I don't think you would read that directly in the film. I think that's we can only read that because we've watched all.
You know, doing all this has ruined Charles Xavier for me. I'm really glad that there's James McAvoy, unless I worry that it would have ruined Patrick Stewart for me as well.
Yeah.
But he's just such a twat.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've said before in like previous films that like he is not the hero of these films. Like in all of them, he sort of revealed serious character failings. But I kind of agree with Martin that I do think it's interesting that I did feel like the kind of presence of his control over her in this film more than I remembered, to be honest. And I think also it's quite interesting that the release your power moment, it's so what we've like seen from the trailers about what's coming with Dark Phoenix, that now it's directly leads completely to Charles as the one who has then tipped her on this path, like because of his command. With no training, like with no like preparing her for this moment, as far as we've seen, it's all been about control. He encouraged her to unleash this force, and I imagine the next movie is all going to be about them, at least again from what we've seen, trying to use those powers for good. But you can't just put the genie back in the bottle, like once you're like full might, disintegrate the F out of that guy, and it's like, all right, now let's calm it down, let's rein it back in, let's help some astronauts, you know, like it's, I think that is an interesting tipping point to explore.
So I think like watching this movie for the first time, I really felt like they'd rolled a few dice and just selected some generic X-Men themes. And gone, let's just pick bits from other movies that kind of worked and we'll do that again. Mm. And it didn't, this, I honestly.
Cage fighting again?
Nothing in this movie felt new and or interesting. Nothing was happening in this movie where I went, oh, I haven't seen that before. Mm. Where I think I've seen every other X-Men movie up to date, I've gone, oh, that's new or interesting. Mm. Or that's a character done in a new way. But this, you know. Oh, they're at the school. The school's under jeopardy. The kid's there. It blows up. Okay, I've seen that before. There's some X-Men who are turned evil or some mutants who are turned evil. Okay, I've seen that before. Magneto flying up in the sky, controlling loads of metal in a ball around him. I've seen that before. A pretty nonchalant bad person who's just got general bad motives.
Did you not like the final battle? I thought battle was pretty good.
So I think I agree with you on all of that, and I think it's not going to be the most groundbreaking superhero film to ever have been made. But I think the reason I like this film, I think, is in a lot of the first three X-Men films, the one from the early 2000s, everyone was a bit wimpy and no one was kind of really stepping into their power or anything. Mm. Which was annoying. And then in the most recent ones, we haven't really had any of these kind of like just getting on with like having a good fight, being kind of these almost like caricature sort of characters that X-Men always have been. So if like in First Class, it was all about, you know, establishing things again. In Days of Future Past, it was all kind of completely backwards and it was mainly a Wolverine kind of setup. I feel like this is the first one out of the new film, so we've actually just got a team up, a big bad, a mission, and none of those parts are particularly new or innovative. But actually, as a 2-hour kind of superhero romp, I think this does kind of work, and I think you've got really interesting, fun bits within that. It's definitely, you know, it is generally fairly mediocre, but I don't think that makes it unenjoyable. I think you've been slightly spoiled by the other films that we've watched around this in their complexity. But I generally enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I remembered. And I think you've got good bits in there. You've got Magneto, you've got Storm.
What about those characters is a good bit? Because I like Michael Fassbender as Magneto, and I like this portrayal of Storm, but nothing about it was interesting. In fact, you know what? The only interesting moment in the movie where I went, oh, yo, was when Magneto's wife and child were killed.
And that's because
I was like, maybe this is going to be an interesting movie. At this point, I still thought that it had won an Oscar. but I was like, maybe this is going to be good. And then he pops them all with a necklace, and I'm like, this movie has some potential here. Mm. And then it just... that character then didn't develop in a way that I've never seen Magneto before.
No, I mean, swirly things and bridges falling apart. Yeah. Oh my God,
we've seen bridges torn apart a million times.
We have, but I think, and again, my massive conspiracy theory that they're all Magneto origin stories, but, you know, the idea of him kind of having put his past behind him, settling down, living in Poland in a steelworks, you know, his daughter essentially being Snow White at the well with the deer. There's a really great gag reel where the deer have gone completely loose on set and there's like trainers trying to like grab them by the lead, which you should all watch.
That's amazing.
Then through to that
sounds
kind of
more exciting than the movie.
You know, him having to use his powers after the earthquake to kind of, you know, save people's lives. That turning out to be
I thought really that was
painful.
Really interesting, showing that his instinct seems to be for good.
Yeah.
Like, to he didn't even think about, like, oh, should I do this? Should I not? Like, it was just his instinct to save someone.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
And that kind of, yeah, the moment in the woods where the police have come and they've all realised that they need wooden weapons, and then the arrow going through the daughter and the wife. Like, that sort of stuff, I think, is intelligent storytelling. It's just in and around Aladdin with where the genie goes bad.
And I think also Apocalypse, or whatever the hell his actual name is, giving Magneto the opportunity to destroy Auschwitz, I thought was interesting. Like, did you not like that?
I think every other feature of Auschwitz in X-Men storytelling so far has been really carefully handled.
Yeah.
I think in this one it tipped over into using it as a gimmicky prop.
Interesting.
This one didn't feel as respectful as
really?
It had done in the past. Yeah. For me, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think like that scene kind of really plays again into this idea of like the Magneto origin story, like him kind of going back through everything that's happened to him and his experience there, and how much his experience there mirrors like kind of what just happened with his daughter. I mean, not an outcome, but like the staging of it was really similar, like her reaching out to him, being pulled away from him. And so I think, and to be fair, it's sort of a kind of after this where it falls off the rails for me a little bit, because I could kind of see Apocalypse as giving Magneto permission in himself to kind of give in to his worst instincts, to tear something down so completely because he wants to, because it feels good, and because the place deserves it. But I mean, he's making that choice himself. And then it's like, it's a bit later where it gets weirder, where he's just like, okay, with the power of this magnetic dust, I'm going to destroy the world. And then he changes his mind again, which, I mean, just never, ever, ever have that guy on your side, will you?
Like, I think the Auschwitz thing, I think, would have been more impactful if it was just him and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I think the thing that really drew me out of it was, unfortunately, Psylocke being there
in spandex.
Yep. Like, you can't be in spandex in Auschwitz.
That was weird. Yeah.
That was just a bit just odd.
Yeah, that was strange. That was strange. And I mean, all of them, his little entourage is just, it's really fun. Like, when they, oh God, when he builds that big pyramid and you go inside and he's built these massive statues.
I really liked that.
What?
I really liked the kind of unashamedly grandiose comic bookness of this film. Like, the comic books, Marvel comic books, veer on that very close edge of camp.
Yes.
And I think this film had some of those elements in it. And I don't, Dan, you're pulling, if people could see the furrowed brow that you're pointing towards me.
I mean, we knew Dan was going to be biased coming into this. Dan never even tries to hear positive things about a film that he hates. But
in my defense, I think there's positives about this movie.
Okay. Oh, I want to hear them.
Yeah, what are the
And I've said them. Storm and Magneto are okay.
I think I said that and you just nodded.
Yeah, pretty much. I genuinely, and you're probably right, I've come off the back of what? One of the greatest cinema moments that we've ever had, off the back of a couple of X-Men movies that are okay.
Yeah.
But this is just trash, man. And to not beat a dead horse for our listeners now for the next half an hour, but I think the better things about this movie were also ruined by the movie. So I actually was quite in on the intro with the sort of Egyptian style intro. Yeah, and I was cool. Like, that's pretty cool. This is, once again, that was like, this is different. I've never seen this before. You know, I've never seen us really go back in time in an X-Men movie and explore something outside of present day mutants. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of really interesting X-Men storylines about the actual, the original sort of human evolution that led to mutants, like in sort of prehistoric times, and some crazy mutant storylines that happened in that era. But I just didn't get how any of it sort of related to mutants, really, which is sort of what you're here for in an X-Men movie. I was like, okay, a bad guy turns up, but is this at all relevant to mutants and X-Men and their problems, or is it just someone for them to sort of team up with?
Yeah, and to be honest, I think all that comes down to with how truly atrocious the villain was in this film.
Who was, like, the villain in this movie?
I mean,
was it Apocalypse or was it Stryker or was it the government again?
That's the thing. Like, I like every time he was on Apocalypse on screen, I was like, what is your deal, man? One, what are your powers? Like, I don't understand. Sand. Like, sand everything, something, or, you know, create metal of, you know, heal wings and create, you know, movable metal pieces. But just the way he spoke, and like, 'cause like every single like speech that he did was this like bombastic.
Yeah, it had that weird like voice effect on it, didn't he?
Yeah.
But like certain words would be like really big and echoey.
Yeah, and it was, for what, why would you hire Isaacs for that role? Like, it's just, it's such a weird choice to like then not use his face or his voice,
but look like
rig him in something that you can't see his body move.
But look like someone else that you do that with, Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
As Thanos.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
And it's pretty much the same thing. Take a character, make them look not really resemble them, make them big and purple, and give them a weird voice.
I don't know. There's more in Thanos that resembles Josh Brolin, I think, than the.
But as in
limited.
The challenge was still there. They could have much made this character still look like Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, that's true.
But they just got it wrong.
Yeah,
I just don't think they got it right. And nothing was at stake for any character in this movie.
What, the end of the world?
No, but you know that nothing's going to happen to any of them, really. There was never any proper peril. There was no, as you like to say, a double bluff happening
no,
in this
not.
Movie.
I did, and they didn't quite get there with... I don't think they quite landed any of their objectives in this, but I did quite like the nervousness of the X-Men who'd never been into battle before and how they looked up to Mystique. But then Mystique gave this really weird speech, which I didn't really like. But I quite liked... that, you know, I think that the point of this film was to say, because of Apocalypse's actions, this is the time that good mutants had to kind of step out of the shadows to save the world. I think that's generally what we were trying to get at, because, you know, the stuff that happened in Cuba was a cover-up. David's Future Past didn't really deal with any of that stuff. I think this is the time now which is setting up the stall for the other three kind of original X-Men films where people are more out in the open.
Mm. People call on them to help.
Yeah, and I feel like this is the time where you could have really had a really interesting story about everyone's kind of comfort about becoming heroes or using their powers to fight rather than using them to, steal stuff, earn tips, don't know. But that got lost amongst all the sand and metal flying through the air, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think what was frustrating as well is that it looked different at the start, as in you were seeing maybe new environments like ancient Egypt, but in a really, really gold, shiny, freshly painted hieroglyphs way. But then the present day was just... it looks like a random African city in present day.
The styling,
there's nothing flitted. Unique, and we criticised that about Wolverine as well. So the movie The Wolverine criticised that they were in Japan, but it didn't. It just felt like we've shot it in Japan. That's enough. Where they didn't, there was no curation to make it feel like it was actually in a specific time and place. Mm. That could have been anywhere, especially when stuff's swirling around. It's just CGI brown and greyness.
I did think they got the 80s feel generally quite right, especially with a lot of the clothing choices of the people at the mansion. Mm. I feel like that felt about right. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of the kind of hair was a bit more considered than than the 60s. I think they nailed the 80s better than they did the 60s.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Quicksilver had his little moment with a Walkman.
Yeah.
Yeah?
What did you feel about that scene?
What did you feel about that scene?
Oh, what did I feel about that scene? You should have hosted this podcast.
Well, this is because this is the first time you've seen it, so I feel like you're...
I didn't think it was... I'm assuming I'm not going to be... many people disagree with me here that it wasn't as better as the Days of Future Past scene.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I thought it felt a little... overblown, as in it felt like he got a lot done in a lot of time. Either he's got quicker,
yeah.
Quicker something is wrong there.
Yeah. The logistics of making sure you got everyone out just don't see. And that was weird too at the end where he was just so casual, like, pretty sure I got everyone. It's like, well, you didn't. Yeah. So stop being so flippant about it.
And there's also destroyed the seriousness of the situation. Mm. Like, the X-Men's mansion is being destroyed.
I agree with that. I think that scene could have been more impactful I know he's like a jokey character and he has a good time. He kind of loves his life. He loves his powers, which is something I really like about Quicksilver, that he always brings the fact that he has no problem with who he is. And you remember back in Days of Future Past where he's like, if you tell anyone, they're not going to believe you, so I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want. But I think because of that, because he's such like a casual bro, if they had played that scene, still with the speed, but like with him being like, fuck, 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 like, you know, trying desperately to help everyone, I think that would have done a lot to like up the tension and make it a bit more heartbreaking when you realize,
if he was like, I'm sorry. To save someone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or just like have that moment where he stops, takes a breath, looks at this destructive mansion and be like, oh, that was pretty serious. Yeah, there wasn't any way to it. And even like when all the school kids were on the grass, like, they were all still looked quite pristine.
Yeah.
Like, none of them really were, like...
A lot of them were this close to fire. They would have had burns.
Yeah. Not to mention, he's always making such a big deal about bracing people's necks when he runs with them. He definitely wasn't doing that this time.
Yeah. And what did we think of, like, him and Magneto's, like, daddy story? Because, like, that was another moment where the script really let me down, I think. Mm. When Quicksilver was watching the TV in his mum's basement and his mum comes down and she's like... She says something really, like, really stereotypical, like, you're not going to find the answers you're looking for.
Yeah, or you don't want to know.
If you go after him, it's not going to end well. And, like, say something more specific.
Mm.
Acknowledge the fact that you slept with Magneto. Just anything to, like, it was just...
Or the pain of, like, I understand that you want to know who your father is, but believe me when I tell you, he's not a good person.
Yeah.
Something like
that. Give me something specific.
Mm. As well, if you're going to do a daddy storyline, do a daddy storyline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They teased it in Days of Future Daddy.
Yeah.
But they just did more teasing in this.
And Magneto would never turn to like a random person next to Mystique and be like, and who are you fighting for?
Yeah.
And it's like, you, because you are my father. Like, people don't talk like this.
Yeah. And, I mean, I did kind of appreciate that Quicksilver did choose to keep it to himself, like didn't tell Magneto that he was his dad, because like that would have been a moment where he could have like manipulated the situation to be like, I'm your son.
If you could stop trying to destroy the world and kill everyone for a minute.
Yeah.
I'm your son.
Yeah, exactly. And I can understand him being like, maybe this isn't the moment where I want to like, you know, get my father to know me for the first time. But yeah, it did feel like a bit of a wasted film, because I do like his character. And I felt like genuine, I didn't love the bit when he was hitting Apocalypse around slow motion, but when Apocalypse trapped him and broke his leg.
Oh yeah, that was pretty...
That felt like the first bit of real jeopardy and like the like someone's hurt and this could go badly. Like that, it's amazing that that one moment I think held more like tension in it.
Yeah, I think there was that moment, but I also think Wolverine's attack on the Stryker base was quite violent and a bit like, oof, that was a bit much.
So do you think I was thinking about this, and I think if you removed the Stryker stuff from this movie altogether, I think you'd have a better movie.
I agree. Why was he there?
So were you surprised to see Wolverine?
I wasn't surprised to see Wolverine because it was so obvious where this was going.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. The second Stryker shows up, it's like,
All right, okay. So some of them are going to be taken. Maybe stuff's going to happen to some of them, but Wolverine's definitely going to be there. I'm surprised he didn't pop out of water in angry, bloody topless rage again. Instead, he pops out of a box this time, sniffing everything.
Like a sore headgear on.
And like weird three-quarter length pants.
Yeah, they were not
fine. It's like, we can't have him nude in this one, guys. You know, we've done that in two movies now. That's going to get old.
So I remember the first time seeing this film, actually being genuinely surprised that he was in it and we got another Wolverine moment. I don't know, I didn't see it coming. But maybe because I'm not.
I feel like the whole reason you had any Stryker stuff in this movie so that we could have a Wolverine cameo.
Agreed.
Check that box.
Yeah.
He said he'll only do one more movie, so we need to check that box.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we've done it.
I think to like kind of set up. So without it, there's like kind of a gap between when Stryker fished him out of the river and then whatever happens later in his life. So this was the moment where he would get released to go off without a memory, and Jean heals part of his memory. Makes zero sense why she doesn't recognize him when he shows back up at the mansion and for many years. Time,
I mean, this is quite an important moment for these characters. Yeah. But we know that the timeline has changed somewhat. Oh, this isn't I'm not getting into time and stuff, but this isn't Marvel's very simple explanation for time travel.
No.
This is a very complicated situation where some things have or haven't changed. So we know at the end of Days of Future Past, Logan turns up and Charles is like, I've got a lot to fill you in on. So this might
that
be
was
one
a
of
really
those
good
things.
Impression.
Yeah, it was a good impression, yeah.
I think, yeah, one of those things I'm assuming is, oh yeah, by the way, Jean Grey knows who you are.
Yeah.
For a lot longer. And I wonder if that would be more interesting because potentially they'd have a bit more of a less romantic relationship in the new future. Maybe a bit more brother-sister in terms of like they've got a closer bond, that sort of thing. Especially with how feral the Wolverine is in this situation. Oh. You know, it's like a first thing that you smell when you're born, sort of, you know, you think it's your mummy sort of situation.
And they seem a lot closer in ages in the first three X-Men films than they do in this one.
Yeah, but Wolverine doesn't age.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean,
answered that one.
Yeah. Which I was thinking was a bit weird, but, you know.
I mean, it is, I mean, if you think about this, this movie now takes place 10 years after the future past in the past times, and no one's aged up. But, I mean, what are you going to do? I wouldn't have wanted everyone to be wearing, like, you know, either had that horrible, horrible CGI age-up stuff or makeup. So those are some things you just got to swallow, don't you?
So we've done a lot of Magneto character development. And the other strand that we had going through these movies is, we've said, are they Magneto origin stories, but are they Charles Xavier origin stories? And what is Charles's character development like? Other than he's a sex pest.
What did that come from? What do you mean he's a sex pest?
Like, he's constantly like, Moira McTaggart.
Oh, the whole, like, the whole...
I'm going to check you out. I mean, check out.
Yeah, that was creepy when he was like stumbling over his words and was like, I wiped your memory. I was like,
I know where she is. I know where she is in time and space. I've been watching her.
I've been keeping an eye on her.
We can go to her. Let's go to her right now.
Can you imagine
now?
Him having like some quiet time in Cerebro? Oh, like, watching.
I'll give her my hot, steamy memories.
He's just
Moira, take your memories. And he's like, oh, yes. Give my memories back to me, Charles.
Please stop.
I'm going to have to mark this one explicit when I upload it.
But, I mean, Charles Xavier has not had a good run in these films. And I think, again, in this film, we get all the worst bits of Charles. We get manipulative Charles. We get, and it's a really weird spectrum of bad things we get about manipulative, sexist and incapacitated.
Yes.
Like,
incapacitated
he,
last
can
30
he be,
again.
Can he be carried?
So,
like, this time he wasn't.
Cerebro, dead or sex pest.
Yeah. like in the last bit of it, he was laid on a rock for quite a lot of it, and then carried, and then laid on a piece of stone, and then tied to the stone, and then laid on a rug.
Yeah. Brief battle in the Mind Palace, don't forget.
So the bit in the Mind Palace.
Can I just, before we do the Mind Palace, I feel like Charles Xavier is that like the guy on the roof that Quicksilver saves, where he's like, his tongue's out, he's going in for the...
Oh, yeah, and that girl is not into it.
Like, oh, what the fuck? That's Charles in this movie.
Yeah, he's always got his tongue out. Can we go into the Mind Palace?
Mind Palace.
So
welcome to the mind palace.
So I think just when it's like, I can fight you in my mind. And then he's like, oh, it was. Right, this is really horrible. And I'm sorry if no one else thought this. But when Apocalypse was really big and he was like pinning Charles down, did it look like he was having his way with him from behind? Is it just me that thought that?
There was a moment.
There was a lot of groaning and pushing his face down into what could have been a pillow. Yeah. I just... Is it just me who thought that?
No, I mean, I saw the connotations.
I mean, I remember the fight, but like, I don't think I was paying that much attention at that particular moment. I think the dog was doing like running around. And
it was a lot of like...
We've all seen the Captain America thing flying around after Endgame, where it's him behind himself fighting each other. There was a lot of that.
There was a lot of that.
There was a lot of male tussling.
Yes, male tussling. It was very like Dom Sub at one particular point.
Yeah, I wish I'd paid more attention now.
This bit, I thought this bit could have been so Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it
could have been
like using the environment, being trippy.
He could have done this in ancient Egypt and it'd be like gold and the fighting in a gold.
Using pieces of Cerebro to like fight each other.
Ugh.
I think the bit that I did like in that film was the Cerebro doors opening and Jean Grey walking through them.
Yeah.
I really thought that was like a badass moment.
That was a suitably impactful moment.
But there is no point in these films where Charles Xavier is being a cool superhero.
Yeah. I mean, we're just kind of fed this thing like over and over again that he is like the most powerful mind.
It's propaganda. He's in your head.
Yeah, but I think like, so he got to knock Apocalypse around a little bit, but like so did fucking Quicksilver.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, that really should have been Charles's moment, and then like Apocalypse gets him through like trickery or something like that. But the fact that he was taken down so fast. Just
and like Apocalypse made himself bigger, so like Charles, make yourself even bigger.
Yeah, go
like
bigger.
Throw a bit of the mansion at him, you know. Let's have a full-on like Transformers Power Rangers moment if we need to. But there was just none of that whatsoever.
Agree.
Mega Apocalypse versus Giant Xavier.
He could have had really big wheels.
Throws his wheels
off. Throws his joystick.
Yeah.
Just like I feel like the people making this film had like a certain amount of creativity and it got used up on certain things and then they just ran out and they just kind of went back to the, like, even I think like if we look at the team up moment, like, so we're back out of Mind Palace now, but we're in Egypt,
I think
all began.
Yeah.
Like,
because that's when he's saying like this was meant to be the greatest city in the universe, and it, you know, it will be now. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's where it.
Yeah.
But like the start, the team up of the powers there to fight Apocalypse was really reminiscent of the team up on Titan to fight Thanos, and the creativity of merging people's skills and abilities were so much more dynamic. To say there's only 3 years between these two films, this didn't feel like a 2016 team up of superheroes to me. And like when the Steel X came in, when Magneto joined the battle,
get.
I was like, those X's are not blocking anything.
Get me out of this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed the final battle because I think potentially by that point I was like, okay, it's almost over. Like, let's just, like, take it. And I like that. I like seeing the displays of power. I always really enjoy that. And we've said it before, like, that's something that, like, the X-Men are supposed to do well. Like, they do combo fights. Like, that is their thing. And so I did like seeing that. Like, I thought that was a fun bit of cinema. Like, Kurt poofing around and Scott. Man... We also have yet to get like Cyclops being truly cool as well. He's just
he's never had a really cool moment, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Bless him.
And you know, I appreciate they found like a couple ways to make Beast relevant, where it's definitely a fight where you need long range weapons.
Yeah, yeah, but Beast has a star, but I don't mind Beast in these films. He seems a bit tougher.
Hmm.
But I just think the culmination of all those cool powers never really.
No,
I did like the Mystique double bluff.
Oh, yes, that was good.
I was
that
like,
was
oh, Psylocke, because I was expecting Storm to join the fight, because obviously she had to, right, at some point. And there was, kept cutting back to her looking, like, conflicted.
Exactly, yeah.
But when Cyclops, Psylocke comes in and like starts having a go, and I was like, yeah. Oh, I completely forgot that she changes her mind and joins the fight.
Me too. And I was like, why? Why has she changed her mind? This doesn't make any sense.
And then it turns out to be Mystique. Like, that's a cool moment. We just didn't get a huge amount of those in the end fight. And then we release the power.
So I think there's a couple of ways that I can fix this movie.
Go for it.
Okay. Get rid of the striker mutants being captured stuff.
What would be in its place? Because you need some...
I'm pretty...
What about the... We don't know, bro.
And then I think one of the difficulties that this movie has is that there's lots of things happening and the X-Men are just all in one place.
Uh-huh.
So you've not got any people peppered about doing separate storylines. Actually, you've got... You see bits of things, just people reacting in a room.
Yeah.
So you've got, I think, a real opportunity in this movie to take someone like... who we've seen in a political situation previously, like a Hank McCoy, and have him actually, in a different scenario, also fighting battles, trying to stop things. So, you know, put him in Washington. Put Hank McCoy in a Washington, trying to do a political thing, trying to work behind the scenes to also move things in the mutants' favour, and have that threat from another angle and give us another little thing going on. We miss those little threads of other characters making bits move.
You could have even had, and I didn't really quite, it didn't really serve a purpose, but when Apocalypse let all the atomic bombs, like, you could have had a separate storyline of like half of the horsemen going to get the nuclear codes or something, and Hank and someone else having to go off to stop them. It was very much, I think we're used to superhero films where there's almost like two or three different things trying to happen.
So did Apocalypse get rid of those just so human beings wouldn't be able to use them? I didn't really understand the point of that plan.
I thought that was to
was he going to rain it down on people?
No, to just like make a level playing field amongst nations.
Yeah. Ah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, just make everything neutral so he could take it over, I guess.
Cool.
But it's... I think that's what's missing, and I think you need to take someone like a Hank McCoy, and that feeds into when we next see him as Fraser Crane, where he's, you know, actually older and political. I think you take a few characters and put them in a different situation. So you take a Storm from the Apocalypse side of things, and maybe you split off someone like a Cyclops to be doing something with the bombs or the nukes or something like that somewhere else, so you've got another problem that needs to be fixed. In this, there's one problem that needs to be fixed. That's Apocalypse.
There's Magneto as well.
But it...
But that's a very talk him off a ledge.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Come on, Magneto's at it again. Oh, God.
I know, he's trying to wipe out humanity again.
I think that's what it's... There's not enough in this movie. There is not enough. There is just a very simple thing and then like some reaction shots. And I think that would go a long way, not to making it a brilliant movie, but a long way to making it just what you seem to view it as a casual superhero romp.
Because visually, I thought it was great. Like, I thought the effects were really good. I agree, the kind of like gray-brown dust at the end was a little bit, could have been more visually stimulating. But I think in general... costuming, the effects, I thought were all quite good. It just needed a sharper, tighter storyline.
And when we talked about Endgame, you said that you had those kind of Saturday, Sunday morning films which you put on, which you don't really need to pay attention to. You know, Endgame, Infinity War, they're quite complex, get your head around them films. Does this not fit into that category of, I'll put it on if I'm looking at my phone and eating breakfast through it? Because I felt like you did the first. I wasn't looking forward to going back into this film, but now this does kind of fit that category for me. Of it's like, oh, I just want to watch some superheroes have a pop at each other. This falls into that space for me.
I think if it was on TV and it was in the last third, like I would watch like the last bit through to the end. No, I would say this movie. Like, that kind of thing in the X-Men the XU so far, like, Days of Future Past, definitely the first two X-Men, definitely they're ones I could just, like, have on the background and be watching. This one definitely falls more into, like, kind of Last Stand, the Wolverine type movies for me, because there's, like, enough... It's one of those films where, like, so much stuff while simultaneously no stuff is happening. Mm. And that makes it very hard for it to be a movie to dip in and out of.
I think a movie, so a Saturday morning movie, what you want is some very clear sort of like big action moments throughout, where even if you're only in it for 20 minutes, you know, oh, hang on, let me just get to this next bit. So, you know, let's take a really easy pick. It's the first Iron Man movie. You're watching the sort of first act, and you're like, oh, I need to go out at 9. I'm just having my cereal. But you're like, if I just hang on 5 more minutes, I get to see him get out of the tunnel with his big Iron Man suit, and then I can stop and go. This does. When is that in this movie until we're just in a big swirly cloud ball at the end?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like there aren't any elements of this movie that I really look forward to seeing. Mm-hmm. Like again, even just like his little clips. There's really brief moments that I think are kind of funny, but it wouldn't be worth watching the film again.
This is really unusual for you two to like something less than I do. What's happened? I don't like this anymore.
Well, we've only got 2 more chances.
Two more chances? So we have got is it a week's time?
2 weeks.
In a week's time.
So not next week, because Phoenix comes out the 7th of June, and we'll be dropping our Phoenix review the next day. So
8th of June.
Or are we gonna are we doing it the next day, or should we do it the week after?
We can do it on the day of. Let's be the first podcast out there.
Okay. Damn.
Let's just record it in the cinema. Just live reactions. That's fine.
Okay.
But so how okay.
Let's just get it done and get it out there.
Okay, I'm into that. But Dan, so because you dislike this movie so heartily, we're going into Dark Phoenix, which there's a lot to say that this movie was doing its best to kind of set up for that. What are the things that you think they could do to make it a good film? Like, what are you hoping for? What are you potentially excited to see in Dark Phoenix? No purple men.
So we need jeopardy.
Yeah.
We need an actual realistic expectation that characters can die.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be a cornerstone of any superhero movie, is that there is peril.
I think I can call it now. Who's going to die?
Oh, yeah. I think the trailer pretty solidly gave that away.
I think what you need is some really, really great but exciting visuals.
Mm-hmm.
So colour, something that you've not seen before, an element at play that's new. And I think a lot of movies now are really good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got high expectations for this.
Well, no, I think like Dark Phoenix, we've not really seen the Phoenix Force at play properly in a great...
I hope it's just not a load of fire.
Yeah,
I think there is going to be a lot of fire.
but make it spaced, you know? Yeah, I mean, like, we've got all of that space stuff that we can throw in, and space can be any colour you want.
I think space is going to be over in the first 15 minutes.
We've got, but with the fire thing, right? So Lord of the Rings, the first Lord of the Rings movie where Gandalf has the giant Smaug firework, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're looking at that and you're like, it's fire. But you're like, I've never, ever seen this before. This is great.
Even the Eye of Sauron, like pure fire, but that, like, it was a character with
visually
fire.
Brilliant, right? And it's just it's an eye.
It's an eyeball.
Right? And it's like, I'm more emotionally invested in that eyeball than I have been in this whole movie. So just make it look interesting and great. I don't just want loads of... X-Men movies seem really bad for just making loads of dirt and dust swirl around everything.
It's their jam, isn't it?
Like, put a fight scene on a grassy knoll. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you don't have to do it in the ruins of a city.
Yeah.
And I think other than that, I just need to see some of these characters moving in either closer to the characters that we expect them to be. Finally, I need to see an Xavier step up and be an Xavier.
Yeah.
I need to see a Cyclops step up and be a Cyclops. Mm. But then some of them, I need to see them go in the other way. You know, I need to see some of these characters actually do something new and different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big one now for me is Mystique. I need to see Mystique do something new and different.
Die.
I need to see a Magneto do something new and different. Like, just go savage. If you're going to have a character development, now is your time to go savage. Just do it. I don't want any Wolverine. I don't want any Stryker. I want nothing about Weapon X.
Yeah, agreed.
I think for me, I'm going to need another antagonist apart from Dark Phoenix.
I think that's probably going to be Jessica Chastain's character, the white-haired lady. I'm so curious to see what her character is and what she brings.
Because I'm seeing her as, like, in Jean Grey's
Ooh,
head.
Oh, interesting.
As, like the devil on her shoulder.
Ah.
But I think we need, and it cannot be a Stryker. Please, God, can it not be a Stryker or the government. But I want another...
You know what really hates mutants? The government.
But I just want... it can't all pin on Jean Grey. There has to be some other... There has to be more complexity. Mm-hmm. Like... Apocalypse. The baddie was Apocalypse. It can't be Dark Phoenix and the baddie is Dark Phoenix. It needs to be more complicated than that.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think the XCU is really crying out for like a Captain Phasma or a Boba Fett. Sort of just someone who's there.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they look cool and they're posing a threat.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, they're adding a bit of extra like, ah!
Yeah.
But I don't need a great reason. I just need, you're a bounty hunter, you want to fight him. Okay.
Yeah.
I get that. And that's what they keep trying to do with Stryker, but then you go into these green, weird, mossy dungeons and Wolverine's in a box somewhere around that facility.
Yeah.
And you can hear him go...
Oh, that was so weird.
Oh, right, Wolverine. Oh, Martin. Fine. Final thoughts. Give me him. Don't be afraid to like this movie.
Well, now I feel like how you felt after Doctor Strange. I hadn't rewatched this film since I went to see it, and I was disappointed. But I think in the context of all the X-Men films we've seen so far, I don't think it's as bad as you guys make it out to be. I think it was generally fine. And I know we don't want mediocre and we don't want fine, but I'd watch it again. I don't mind it.
That's good. Glad.
Anna?
For me, I think for me, this wasn't a good rewatch. In the sense that like I was so disappointed when this came out in cinema. Like, absolutely, like, gutted by it. Because I really like Future Past. I thought they'd done an awesome job. And then this one came out in cinema, and I was just like, what was that? I thought, like, they finally understood the X-Men and the way, like, that was going to go. Because I said it again. Like, I was an X-Men fan well before I came to our general MCU. It was another movie where I was like, who was this for? Like, who is this for? And I don't understand. That being said, there were definitely some points of lightness for me, some things that I remember enjoying more, and there actually are some characters now that I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing again in Dark Phoenix. I really hope Quicksilver has a good showing again. I really enjoy his character every time I see him. And I think the main thing I need out of Dark Phoenix is I want to feel a connection to someone. I feel like everyone is very alienating at the moment. Their characters, like, don't let you in. Mm. So I really hope what they spend some good moments doing is really building up a proper, like, struggle in Jean. Like, fighting against, if you are an all-powerful creature, like, what does that mean when it does actually matter to you to have, human connections? I really want to see Charles to get someone to properly tell him the F off for once. And then, yes, I want him to take that and then start to become the Professor X that we know, or we're supposed to know, he's capable of being.
I feel like we so rarely see... We're always, like, teased that these characters have a prime. But I want to see a character in their prime.
Yeah.
And that was just a really good point that you made. I'm not rooting for anyone.
Mm.
Like, I'm all the Avengers, pretty much. I'm like...
Oh, yeah.
I'm invested in this one. Do I like any of the X-Men? Kind of like Mystique. Mm. Is that's probably it. That's probably because I like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, I like Magneto's character, but I'm not particularly rooting for him.
Totally.
I think he's cool, but...
Totally.
And where is my investment?
I think it would take very little to sort of tip someone in that direction. Like if they expanded, you know, just to go back to him again, like Quicksilver a bit to make him that kind of plucky.
Or make Nightcrawler really funny.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, because like in the comics, Nightcrawler is so like kind-hearted and loving, but he's always held at arm's length because he's really creepy looking. Mm-hmm. So like there's so much. There's so much there to work with, and I just want them to seize it and do it. And I'm going into Dark Phoenix with I would say actually like I've got relatively low expectations, which I think is a good thing. But I'm going into it with a lot of optimism.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you are whoever now owns the X-Men franchise, is it Disney?
Disney.
It's Disney. If you're Disney right now, I think you've got to be looking at this movie and say, why is every single movie an X-Men movie? Like, why is it X-Men do this, X-Men do that? Why isn't it this one character does something?
That's what they tried to do with Wolverine.
Other character over here does something. Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're just trying to make a team-up movie every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, maybe we don't need a team-up movie every single time.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to see one of these characters go and shine and do something and have one of those characters not be Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like, do that.
Yeah.
Go make some money.
And maybe that's what we'll see after this. So. We don't know what the next iteration of...
And we don't know what Dark Phoenix has to bring us. It may be the bomb.
It may be.
It may just bomb, right?
It might just bomb.
It's either going to bomb or it's going to bomb. It's going to be the bomb.
Right.
For me, this movie goes. Anna?
Goes for me.
Martin?
It stays.
Oh, come on.
And wait till you see where it fits in the ranking.
Right, well... Listeners, please get in touch with us on social media. Let us know what you thought of this movie.
I need some help.
We can't wait to hear. Yeah. Martin needs someone on his side. I think this is getting perilous for him now. I may do another watch of this movie. You've slightly convinced me. Well, because, you know, there were some other movies which I went back to a second or third time and my mind was changed, and you've had that similar experience. And so have you with Doctor Strange. So maybe I'll give it a second shot. That is fair before we score. At the end of the season. But listeners, please get in touch. Anna, if listeners want to find the show or you, where can they find you?
Well, they can find the show at on Instagram at A Marvelous Lunch Break. I myself, also on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
Martin?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter, Martin Loves.
And you can find me on my brand new Twitter account at Planet Daddy.
Oh.
Get over there. Take a trip.
He's being serious.
He is being serious.
This isn't a joke.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Been a marvelous lunch break. Have a good week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Post-credits.
Was the one.
Twas.
I didn't stick around.
Me neither.
Did either of you stick?
I love this movie, but as soon as the credits rolled, I fucked off.
I'm out of practice.
I mean, to be fair, it's barely worth mentioning. I'm a little bit disappointed, though, because the one thing I did that you guys haven't seen it, mostly because... So I'll just go through it really quickly. It's a guy walking through the Stryker facility. They're mopping it up. They're vacuuming up bullets and shit. And this guy, who... He looks... When I first like glimpsed him, he looks so much like flipping Steve Mnuchin, one of Trump's like henchmen, the Secretary of Treasury at the moment. He looks so similar. Basically, the guy just comes in, pulls out some vials of Wolverine blood, put them in a briefcase, closes the briefcase. Briefcase says Essex Corp, which is the corporation that does Weapon X, that programming thing. That is literally it. Total waste of time. So glad I was able to fast forward through the credits. That's the lot.
No one wants Weapon X. Like, the best portrayal of anything remotely close to Weapon X has been in the first Deadpool movie. That's it.
Done.
Every other representation of that stupid facility has been pants.
But Deadpool came out after this one. So I don't know if maybe that was sort of like a bit of a tease.
Did the first Deadpool come out after this movie?
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
No.
I have no idea.
Oh. Don't quote me on that.
No way. Good. Right, well, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.